Before we begin today's show, you know him, you love him. He's one of the best sports reporters on the planet. I'm, of course, talking about ESPN's very own Adam Schefter, who at the time I'm saying this is probably tweeting something that millions of people will like and retweet, but only after he changes his fantasy lineup before he knows when certain players are coming back. I thought that was a little bit shrewd last week. And I think that if I was in his fantasy league, I would lodge a protest. But if you didn't know, he's got his very own podcast, brilliantly named the Adam Schefter Podcast. Every episode, he gives you the NFL world's latest and interviews with some of the most knowledgeable football people out there. You can download and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, you can also subscribe, rate, and review the Hoop Collective while you're there. Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing Sunday night. Joining us from Southwest Florida, Fort Myers, Naples area, is our front office insider, all-around good guy, Bobby Marks. Hi, Bobby.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing good, although I guess my grand European vacation for the offseason is canceled.
Just hey, kidding. You might have your summer back though. You might
That's
have your
true.
August back.
That you're not kidding. Will we be able to go anywhere in August? Please advise. And joining us from Los Angeles is another one of our fine gentlemen. Covers the LA teams for us and knows more than anybody about the LA Clippers. Right, Om?
Yeah, I wish.
Om Young Masuk joining us. The story that Woj, Zach Lowe, and I worked on for several days last week and finally sort of came together on Friday that so last Monday, the I think it was Monday. I don't know for sure what day it was, but I think it was Monday. The owners finance committee, there's a group of owners who make up the finance committee, had a meeting. And in that meeting, they looked at everything and they decided, you know what? We need to play sooner rather than later. For reasons that we'll talk about here in a few minutes. And by Friday, by the time the full board of governors meeting had come together, the full owners meeting, which they met, I don't know if it's over Zoom or if it's over some secret channel, but it was virtually, that it was pretty much decided that it was going to be Christmas or even sooner. And they have to work out a deal with the players up here in the next few days. It's probably going to be a December restart, late December restart for the NBA, which is not something even Adam Silver was believing 3 weeks ago. Bobby, what was your reaction when you heard that this was actually going to happen this way?
Not really surprised, Brian, because when we wrote that FAQ right after the season had over, one of the questions in there was, are we going to see playoff games in August and in September? And based on the commissioner's comments, that was going to be yes. But when you really do a deep dive, if the league ever wanted to get back to that July to June schedule, they were going to have to probably start in late December or early January and play 70 to 72 games to do so. And, you know, it's going to be kind of a shotgun start here with everything that's going to happen here. But playing games in September, playoff games in September and October is not appealing. You know, we saw certainly when you're competing against the NFL and college football, and if we can get back to, you know, a normalized schedule, that was always going to be the goal. So it's not surprising. It is funny though that Saturday morning, around 7:30, I'd gotten a text from a GM, and he basically, the text basically said, December 22nd, are you blank kidding me? And I said, I think that's where we're heading. And basically it was, what happened to health and wellness, right? What happened to the health and wellness of the players as far as back-to-backs and, you know, the 4 and 5 nights here? And, you know, we'll talk about back in 2011-12 when the lockout was lifted. I mean, there were teams playing, you know, 3 nights in a row and a lot of back-to-back. So we'll see how the schedule makers work this out. I think that it'll be a little bit different, guys, because you won't have many dates that you're going to be – you're going to have a blank schedule, I think, unless you have some hockey team.
Yeah.
You're not going to be competing with I don't want to say Van Halen. Van Halen back in the day, but you're not going to be competing.
You're definitely not competing with Van Halen.
Not Van Halen, but you're not going to be competing with Bon Jovi at the Barclays Center for our monster truck somewhere. So
right.
You will have, you know,
a Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
That's right. A more of a blank schedule there.
What did you think? Did you have a grand vacation to Thailand plan that you now have to shut down?
I did. Well, first of all, rest in peace, Eddie Van Halen, one of the greatest of all time. But I was surprised because I think everybody, all these assistant coaches and coaches I had talked to who were in the bubble, almost all of them had heard, you know, hey, this is a month ago. We're like, hey, we're here in February, you know, because the NBA wants to wait as long as they can to get fans in the building. And obviously, we're looking at, you know, something that is going to be probably no fans because of the surge.
There may be fans in some places, but there certainly will not be in all the arenas, and there certainly will not be the number that they were hoping for.
Yeah, and we don't know where, you know, if we're going to have a vaccine by then and what all that's going to
entail. I would bet against that, but I guess we shouldn't predict things in this world.
Exactly. I was looking at trying to my wife and I have yet to take our honeymoon because we got married like late September last year, right before the season. And then I jumped right into the season and we were hoping to take a honeymoon.
Having said that, Bobby, they got married in Aruba. I feel bad.
There's no better place to get married.
I feel bad for you. I'm just a reporter who wants to give,
you know, hey, quick story regarding Aruba. That's where I did Richard Jefferson's monster contract when he re-signed in his rookie scale extension in New Jersey. And Richard was playing for Team USA, the team that was in Greece. And I was in the Hyatt in Aruba in that business center, faxing the copy to, I don't even know who the trainer was, but whoever the trainer was of Team USA to have Richard sign that and then send it back. So that's my Aruba take for you.
There's a lot of things that have happened in the business world where somebody's in the Caribbean faxing something to Greece. So you probably were not the only person ever to do a deal. This might have been a little more above board than some of the deals that have gone down in Aruba over the generations. But
Wendy, what I wonder about this is the players cannot be happy about this quick turnaround.
Well, we're going to talk about the players in 1 second. Let me just say this. I think this is my feel from talking to a lot of people in ownership and front offices and presidents, team presidents who actually have to put the buildings together. I will say this. One thing that is an interesting side effect, a lot of the buildings, which probably wouldn't be open, when I say buildings, the arenas, actually have been opened because they're being used for polling places. And so, you know, this is one of the things is, you know, are these arenas feasibly able to start hosting basketball in a short period of time? And in some cases, the buildings have been set up, you know, because of the voting. So in a way, the players, you know, pushing for that has made it more feasible for the NBA to start. But let's just be honest here. The ratings were a very big disappointment. Look, I am not going to sit here and try to tell you why the ratings were so bad. There are people who have their opinions. I've read many stories on them. I don't know. I think there's probably 100 different things. I don't know. But the end of the day is the NBA playing in August, September, and October was not good for ratings. Now, your argument back could be, well, any rating is better than 0.0, and any basketball is better than no basketball. And of course, I agree with that. But if you are a planner and you just saw an example of what ratings look like outside the normal NBA window, you would be concerned about that. Number two, the way the virus is going right now, and of course, all of us know 8 months in here that we can't really predict it. The NBA owners were looking at this and saying, you know, we could wait until February and we could be in February and we could be in the exact same boat that we are in now. And we would have let 2 months go past and we would have had no chance on correcting the calendar for next year. And I think that was a driving factor too, that we could still be not having the fans that we want in the building by then. And number three, the opportunity to claim Christmas. Bobby, I saw a report. Now, I have not personally heard this, but I don't doubt the report that the union was told that starting on Christmas would be worth potentially $500 million more. How? Or is that something that maybe is still being negotiated? How could it be worth more? The TV contract is the TV contract, and you're certainly not getting fans in the building.
Yeah, I don't know about it more. I mean, I was looking at it more that it was probably not starting earlier would probably incur more losses, you know, or you take that number off whatever. I mean, we were projecting Brian Ohm 8.4 billion was the BRI number for 2021. So it's not like all of a sudden now that number was going to be like 8.9 just because we're starting on you know, on Christmas now. So I looked at it more as far as more of a loss than a gain by starting, you know, closer to Christmas compared to waiting in, you know, the end of January and end of January, early February here.
And so let me just say this. Why December 22nd? Well, here's why. So December 22nd is a Tuesday. Christmas this year is on a Friday. Well, I'm going to tell you why December 22nd, because Christmas Day is the big showcase for ABC ESPN. We work for ESPN, just in case you didn't know. It's like pretty much the prime regular season day for our employer. But TNT gets Ring Night every year. They get the season opener and Ring Night. Well, you can't have Ring Night. Well, you could. I mean, I once went to a Ring Night on Christmas Day after the lockout. But it would have been problematic. So TNT is going to get their Ring Night, and I would assume if this passes, I would guess Lakers Warriors, but okay, maybe Lakers Clippers, because I think Lakers Clippers is going to be what we want. I don't know, by the way, I don't know this at all. I'm just guessing, okay, for 100, so we all understand. But I could see, you know, you didn't want the Lakers to have to play Christmas Eve and then Christmas Day, so you start the season as normal on Tuesday night, as the season always does start. And then you have your big showcase on Friday, and the Lakers play Tuesday and Friday, and probably a couple other teams will play Tuesday and Friday as well. So that's why it's December 22nd. So the TNT can have their contracted thing, and so that ABC ESPN can have their slate. And I would imagine that the 5 o'clock game on Christmas Day is Lakers, but we'll see. But you mentioned the players, Ohm. So I've been talking, when I've talked about where this is going and what the players are facing, I've been using the hypothetical $10 million Sacramento King, a Sacramento King who makes $10 million, you know, a higher earner in California. So let's just go over what we're looking at here. This new idea here is for 72 games, not 82, 72. Now, there could be a play-in tournament, and Bobby, I guess they could negotiate some salaries differently, but if they play 10 fewer games, that's 12% less money. So, you know, we'll see how it gets negotiated, but if it's 12% less money, this is actually easy math, even for somebody like me. If you make 10 million and you're making 12% less, that's 8.8 million. Now, in California, your state income tax plus your federal income tax at that income level is going to be about like 48 or 49%. So now you're down to about 4.6 million of your $10 million contract. Now, Bobby, to balance the books, the players are going to have, as we've talked about in this podcast, the players are going to have some of their salary withheld to potentially balance the books, because they were thinking it was going to be $8 billion, but it's going to be less. So, Bobby, how much would you guesstimate today? Just throw a guess out there about how much they may have to have their salary withheld.
I would say at a minimum 30%, probably even maybe even more than that.
Okay, so let's just say that it's 30%. If you make 4.5 million, you get withheld 30%. Now you're down to about 3.1, 3.2 million. Okay, now you have to pay your agent, which is 4%. You know, pretty soon you're down, and you start to think about what these guys are gonna look at. And you know, look, I'm not asking, as I've said before, I'm not asking you to cry for them. But you know, you look at a guy like, you know, Steph Curry or Chris Paul or LeBron James, who are making, you know, in the 40s, right? Or in the $40 million range. Like, it's a heck of a lot of money to them. You know, 12%, you know, 10 less games of $40 million bucks. You know, and I'm not saying that you should feel bad for them, but, you know, that's a lot of money. That's, you know, $8 million bucks or $10 million bucks, somewhere in that range, just in this 10 fewer games. So, Bobby, they're going to have to come to an agreement with the players on this, and they're going to have to do it soon, because coming up Friday is the deadline that the union and the players have set to decide the CBA. And they also promised that they would give an 8-week heads up to start the start of the season. And that's the middle of this week.
Yeah, I would think, Brian and Ohm, that there's going to have to be an agreement, you know, sometime this week, because as the days go by, if we're looking to try to start training camp in, I guess, early December here and start this thing December 22nd, this can't linger into November, into early November. There's so much that has to be done already. But you're right. I mean, it's different from 2011 post-lockout regarding the player salaries is that the escrow stayed the same. What happened was that the players had their actual salary reduced based on the games played. You know, instead of 82 games, it was based on 66 games played. So they took a little bit of a haircut, but there was people in the stands then. I mean, there was revenue coming in for 66 games or 33 home games, right? 66 regular season games, 33 home games, and everything else. We just don't know what the revenue is going to come in at. It could come in at $5.5 billion. It could come in at $7 billion. Because we don't know when.
Right, so they'll hold 30%, and maybe it ends up that they only need 20% to balance the books and the players get 10% back. Or maybe the vaccine comes and there's 20,000 people in the buildings for this by the spring, and it's 10-15%. I mean, you know, that's, we don't really know.
Well, yeah, and that's why during this current year, the players started having their salaries reduced by 25% in mid-May, just because we didn't know if this bubble was ever going to work, right? Or if there was going to be a stoppage or we were going to have to stop playing games. And there's a good chance that the players would get a little bit of that back. We'll probably know in a couple of weeks here when the final audit is done here. But yeah, the escrow protects the revenue split in case it's not evened out.
Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. So, I don't really think the players have much of a leveraging point here. They're probably going to have to agree to this. And I got to tell you, in talking with people on the league side, I did reach out to somebody with a union, but in talking to people on the league side this last week, they didn't act like getting the players to agree was going to be that big of a stumbling block. I'm sure some people are going to be upset, but I'm not sure what they can do about it.
Yeah, look, even though I'm Asian, my math is not, I'm not as good at math as you are, Wendy, but listen, I'm looking at the Lakers. Lakers played on October 11th. And so if the season starts December 22nd, that means their training camp would have to likely start December 1st and give them at least 3 weeks. That gives them 7 weeks from the last game of the finals until a potential opening training camp date. And I get it. All the other teams didn't play as long, except for Miami played as long as the Lakers. But that is a very short turnaround. And I just feel like these guys have gone through a lot. They complained about the bubble, which leads me to the other thing that I'm really wondering how this is going to work is it's obvious a lot of these guys don't want to do the bubble again. And I just really am fascinated logistically of how they are going to make this work. Even with the talk of them going to perhaps if you go play in New York and you'll play the two games against the Knicks and then maybe two games against the Nets, kind of like baseball. I still wonder how this is going to work because I watch the NFL and I see these guys and you have these little outbreaks. One guy catches COVID. Everybody has to quarantine for like 3 or 4 days. You don't know.
And there they have a week
on Sunday. They're going to be back, right?
Right. They have a week between games there. So, you know, there's a little bit of a grace period if there's a test that they can retest guys.
I just think it would be like all hell's going to break loose if they don't have like some sort of, which was an idea that we had heard before, a regional bubble. But I'm sure there's a lot of pushback from the players and coaches not wanting to do that stuff.
I don't think there's going to be, there may be like a little teeny bubble, like let's say four teams come to Los Angeles and they play like a round robin for like 10 days, but it'll just be like scheduling, creative scheduling. I don't think they're going to like be, you know, literally inside a hermetically sealed
situation. But you now are hoping, or you're mandating that your guys don't go out and see people for however long they are in that city.
That's right. I mean, that's what the NFL is doing. And that's why, like, now, the Cleveland Indians, as an example, they found out two of their pitchers had blown off the protocols. And I don't remember if they went to a party or whatever.
Yeah.
And the players voted to send them to the minors. One of them was one of the best starters in the league.
Yeah.
That sounds like when Terrence Williams was late for practice in New Jersey and we voted to send him to Springfield. To the G League.
There you go. Springfield Armor.
Yeah, I mean, there was something with that. There's, you know, I saw there was something with the New York Giants and Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley allegedly being out at a club because they played Thursday night. Saquon obviously not playing, is out for the season. And, you know, there's some guy who posted online on his Instagram a picture of him at some club with Daniel Jones, Saquon. Then he was claiming that this was 2 years ago. But there's, you know, this reminds me again of Lou Williams and the Clippers. And trying to keep guys from basically trying to go out and live their lives or whatever is going to be
none of us are living our lives right now. You know, there's many, many people who are working from home and they don't get to go to clubs.
I get it. And, you know, but I think a lot of us are more disciplined than some NBA players.
Well, I agree. So one of the things that has been discussed here is having a quote unquote 2 week or 10 day break at midseason, sort of as a give back to the players to say, okay, we know we're turning around pretty quickly here, but we're going to give you a midseason break to let you, you know, something to look forward to. But also, you know, this is what, you know, they're also building in a buffer that in case you need those 2 weeks to play makeup games, that you can do that. So, you know, we'll see how that all gets figured out. But one thing I will say here, so, you know, the draft is November 18th. We talked about training camps needing to start around the first of the month. Bobby, how soon after the draft would free agency begin?
Well, originally I thought it would be December 1st, just to, you know, if we were going to target, you know, mid-January. But now I'm thinking if the draft's on that Wednesday, you're looking at probably like the November 22nd, 23rd, right?
23rd's a Monday.
I mean, yeah, I would think you would probably June 30th would actually probably be, November 22nd, and then 23rd, you can start agreeing to deals. And then when
news, deals are going to be starting to agree to. In fact, I have already heard of a deal that's been agreed to. Who knows if it's true or not?
Well, I had one, no. Brian, I had one agent because I was talking about his free agent and salary projections, right? And he said, hey, you're really low. I've already got like two offers from two different teams on that. So I think I don't think we're going to be waiting on much of a holding pattern. But yeah, I think you probably will start. I think we would probably start before Thanksgiving, right? You probably start through Thanksgiving and it just kind of works its way. And it won't be like, I mean, 2011 was out
how about,
of control.
How about Black Friday free agency?
Oh, God.
Perfect, yeah. Right? Black Friday free agency.
So Thanksgiving, we could be getting, we might have to call some GMs because there could be signings on Thanksgiving.
I think so. I don't think they're going to want to do it like 2011, guys, where basically you're signing guys during training camp. Like if we started
let's talk about that. So you were in the Nets front office at the time. So in that time, the lockout had happened, and the lockout was resolved, if I'm not mistaken, on the Friday of Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I think 26th of November.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I want to say the training camp started like December.
Yeah, the players who were under contract, I actually have all my notes though. The players who were under contract had to report by December 8th. And training camp started on the 9th. You couldn't do two days until the 11th, but yeah, and basically the the moratorium was lifted on the 9th when you could start signing guys. So you were basically bringing back your own players, and then during camp, you had free agents kind of filter in to your roster.
Do you remember who like the kind of notable free agent? I mean, the thing we all remember about that is the Chris Paul trade. That was the biggest transaction from that. But Harden, right? Wasn't that? Did Harden get traded that year?
No,
that
Harden James got Harden the following.
Okay, the following year.
Yeah, 2012.
What were the biggest free agents? I don't remember.
We sure didn't sign any. we signed Sean Williams, I believe, and we traded for Mehmet Okor because we had cap space. That was our big. I think that was our big free agent. Yeah, I don't know who the big ones were back in.
I'll look it up in a second. But
yeah, Lamar Odom had gotten traded, right? Didn't he go from the Lakers to Dallas?
And he didn't want to go.
Yeah. But the difference then until and now is that we had a whole new CBA that was coming in that
right.
We had a conference call on December 9th, I believe. It was like one of those three-hour conference calls with the legal, NBA legal, where all 30 teams were on it, and they were basically walking you through the rules. And then they said, okay, guys, you can start going out signing guys, and you start making trades. And we all got off the call, and we were calling each other, and we were like, did you understand what just happened? Like, none of us knew the rules to the point where, I mean, real quick story, when I was in New Jersey, we had always acted as a team with cap space until we went out and, you know, got Joe and signed Jarrell Wallace. And then we're operating as a tax team in 2012. And, you know, like, in, you know, Mirza Teletovic, we had agreed to the full mid-level. Well, shoot, the full mid-level triggers the hard cap. So you can't sign Chris Humphreys. And now you got to go back to Mirza and sign him for the tax mid-level and stuff. So you're basically learning, you know, all these rules on the fly.
There wasn't many. I'm looking at the list of 2011 free agents. It was Marc Gasol was the biggest free agent, but he was restricted.
I think DeAndre didn't DeAndre re-signing with the Clippers. Didn't he have an offer sheet from Golden State? I want to say was that when Bob Myers first got
yes,
there?
Yes, because they used the amnesty on Charlie Bell to make the offer sheet. Yes, yep. DeAndre. David West, I believe, signed with the Pacers.
Yep.
That was kind of a significant move, but it wasn't, you know, we didn't have, the year before was the giant free agency, 2010.
Well, and the lockout was all Dwight too. Like we were, knee deep in trying to get Dwight, and that thing lingered because the trade deadline, and we're going to see the trade deadline probably push to March, I would think. Yeah. It was March 15th, and that we took that all the way up to then. And, you know, the one thing that we've talked about, Brian, is what's the date going to be as far as for when free agents, right, can be traded. Back then, it was March. You had to wait until March 1st. So basically 2 weeks before the trade deadline when that restriction was lifted off these free agents who were signing these contracts.
Yeah, I'm having a walk down memory lane here of on guys who were free agents who are considered the marquee free agents, Nene, for example. But I will say, 2011, Tyson Chandler was a free agent. He ended up going to the Knicks, right? After winning the title with Dallas, did he end up going to the Knicks? Anyway, he was a free agent that year, and he's still technically in the league. So there you go. So, Bobby, this is a little different, though, because in addition to you're trying to work on free agency. There's going to be guys who draft picks, and I would assume that there's going to be trades around the draft. And so you're gonna be drafting a guy November 18th, and it's like, hey, pack your stuff tomorrow and get to our facility because you're starting training camp in 10 days. That's in 2011 the draft took place before. The lockout began July 1st. The draft took place in the third week of June. So, but this complicates matters even more. And then you have the pandemic. I don't know if they're gonna have to quarantine. Maybe they're not gonna quarantine. But you know, ideally you want to quarantine people before you bring them in so that they're not sick. So would there be a quarantine period that you have to figure out? There's a lot they're trying to squeeze in here. For December 22nd.
Yeah, and it's funny that and the league deserves all the credit in the world for the bubble and protecting the players and everyone and no positive tests, but like now we're entering the real world, right? Like the bubble is not going to protect everything that's going to happen, and we're basically going to be on, you know, the time standard that the NFL is going through and basically what MLB went through before they've quarantined at these different locations here. And you're probably going to see expanded rosters. You're going to probably see substitute players in place. You're going to see, you know, quarantine for, you know, certainly when rookies are coming in. It's going to be fascinating as far as what free agents, when they're signed, getting their physicals done, right? Flying them in, you know, how does that work? Is it where they're located? I mean, there's so much that's going to have to get flushed out here, you know, in the next eight weeks, right? I mean, it's if we're trying to get games.
Plus, we have all kinds of coaching changes, and we have two teams that don't have head coaches yet. You know, the Clippers are still hiring guys.
Yeah, I mean, and so was, you know, it was a chain reaction because there's a lot of assistants here in LA with the Clippers and a lot of assistants in Philadelphia that are waiting to see what Doc's going to do, who Ty Lue's going to keep. And so there's a lot of guys up in the wind just wondering where they're going to be in a matter of weeks. And now, you know, I had one assistant tell me, I can't believe this. The season might start in a few weeks, and we don't know where we're going to be, and we got to figure all this out now. And so it just feels like it's total mayhem. One thing you did say, Wendy, and I was wondering what you and B. Marks think. When the bubble, before the bubble started, I had one coach tell me that he felt that it could be like an AAU situation where guys were going to basically, they're going to be around each other so much that they were going to start recruiting guys to come on their team for next year, like free agents, and try to create their own teams. And you were saying that, Bobby was saying that, hey, there's some deals that might already be in place. I'm wondering, that might speed up the process. Did you guys hear of any guys that were in the bubble who might have already been talking to other players about joining forces together?
Trying to get us in trouble. Trying to get us in trouble. Trying to get me aggregated and called by the news desk.
Well, you'd be not taking aggregated off of our pod.
I don't know about you know, trying to team up, but I think there are going to be guys that when they get back to their team and this thing gets going, they're going to wake up and say, like, you know, do I want to go through a 20 and 52 season, right? Like one of those things. And I see what the Clippers have and the Lakers have and, you know, Brooklyn has and some of these other high profile teams, and I want to go join them. And I'm not saying Bradley Beal is the guy because he has pledged his loyalty, but, you know, that's kind of the guy, right? When does it get to that point with him? Or maybe it never does. Like that would be the one guy that, if, you know, and there's no evidence that he is secretly talking to join forces here, but that was always my guy. Even before he signed that extension last year, was like, you know, when does Bradley Beal wake up and say, like, you know, hey, we're going to be in rebuilding for the next 2 or 3 years. Like, here's my get out of jail free card to go try to join forces with another team.
So, yes, that is definitely happening, but I think had already been happening. You know, whether it's Bradley Beal or not, I mean, Bradley Beal recently gave a very politically correct answer to a question about what his future is. And it was almost like he took it out of the book of all the guys. It was like, oh, I'm a loyal guy. I want to be here. I'd love to play my whole career here, but I want to win. It was a perfectly pitch perfect answer. But the thing about it is that this is all now compressed. You know, guys might have thought, well, let's see what happens at the draft. Let's see what my team does in free agency. Let's see where my team is looking or that team is looking. And we'll evaluate. Now, all of a sudden, that's all happening really, really fast. And you know, now between draft, free agency, and the start of the season is so tight, I do wonder if there's going to be a player or two to raise their hand and say, I don't know about this. Plus, you know, when you have a coaching change, there is going to be guys who aren't as comfortable with the new coach. Don't like what that new coach has planned for him. And whereas sometimes things would be maybe let to play out, I could see guys raising their hands. And now, you know, Bobby, you've talked, we haven't had a trade since February. We haven't had a trade in 8 months or whatever. There's deals teams want to make. So there's going to be another bubble, which is the bubble of transactions that have been held off.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where we're going to be heading towards more than what's going to happen in free agency. There's going to be certainly players signed to big, you know, certainly Anthony Davis and Brandon Ingram and some of those other guys will be signed and off the board. But that's how teams are going to be able to shake up their roster. You know, when you're looking at, you know, basically 26 teams having the mid-level or tax mid-level, and that's it to use in free agency. It's going to be the transaction game when it comes to trades. You know, what's the future of Victor Oladipo? And we, you know, he's played the politically correct card also here, and we'll see who they, you know, with their new head coach and Nate Bjorkman, how that works. But yeah, I mean, that's going to be the big thing. Is the
other thing is because there's a very limited free agent market. You know, you've got Atlanta with space, Charlotte with space, Detroit with space, Miami has some space. Who else am I forgetting?
New York.
New York, the Knicks. Yeah. Oh my gosh, yeah, the Knicks got a bunch of space if they want it.
And Phoenix potentially too.
Yeah. But most of the teams out there are going to be playing with just their exceptions. So if guys want to get, you know, contracts of any size, we're going to potentially see sign and trades.
Yeah. And that's the one thing, Brian, that when you talk to teams about the salary cap and the luxury tax, they're like, we don't care if the salary cap stays at 109. Like, who cares? Like, it's, you know, there was going to be four teams with cap space with 109 or with that at 115. The big thing is going to be where that luxury tax number comes in at, because it's more about the hard cap. Right. If you add, you know, the $6 million apron on a $132 million luxury tax, like there's not much flexibility.
Right.
But when you go 139, right, which was the projected number, that gives you more of a, you know, more of a, you know, of a working space there.
So you've just hit on something which could be a negotiation for the players. I've talked about all of these asks that the owners are going to be basically making for the players. One thing that and I talked to an agent the other day, and he was like, if you can artificially inflate the salary cap to 109 million, you can artificially inflate the salary cap to 115, which was the original projection for this year. And the idea of that would be that the luxury tax will go up by 6 million. Everybody, I mean, even though they wouldn't really have that money, that all the players would have to give money back for the cap to be equalized later on, just making it that 115 would give a layer that a bunch of players could squeeze into. Even if they know that for that $10 million, for every $10 million they sign, they may only actually get, you know, $3 million this year in some places. It's better for next year and the year after that. And it's better for teams who want to make moves this year with the luxury tax. But I will tell you right now, Bobby, you know this as well. I'm sure you do, Ohm, too. There are agents out there right now looking at doing negotiations on potential sign and trade deals. It has started. The offseason has started. And you know, a lot of it's just feeling out right now because we still don't know the rules. But my guess is once we hear whether that cap number is an artificial 109 or an artificial 115 or whatever, we're going to start hearing about stuff coming off the board even before the draft. Guys are going to be lined up is what I expect to happen. And how much of that we're actually going to be able to report out there, we'll see, because, you know, for those of us in our business, you hear about a deal being agreed to, you better damn well be sure, because you could end up being wrong. Last year, I've talked about this. There was a player headed to a certain team that was ironclad. He plays point guard. and he was a team in the Mountain Time Zone. We all thought he was going to a team in the Eastern Time Zone, and he ended up with another team in the Mountain Time Zone. You can draw your own line on that. But we thought for sure he was going to one place. And then all of a sudden, that team in the Eastern Time Zone, the Central Division, made a surprising deal, and then that guy went somewhere else. But, I mean, I would have reported it, Bobby. His first name and his last name begin with the same letter. I thought for sure that that was going to happen to a certain spot, and it didn't happen. So I don't know how much this is going to get public, even if we know we can't say, because things are going to change. But all my expect that to be, I expect there to be action, and I expect the team that you cover, the LA Clippers, to be one of the most aggressive teams. I think they're going to have to really look at that roster. And I think, you know, we'll see a couple other teams be, guys, we're going to see the, we're going to see stuff happen with the Knicks, I think, for sure, because they've got $40 million in cap space. But
yeah, I mean, look, Steve Ballmer said it the other day. I mean, he said, we have to literally find every margin that we have to basically get creative with this roster, because they don't have any first round picks to deal anymore. And so they pretty much have, you know, Montrezl Harrell, JaMychal Green, Marcus Morris, Reggie Jackson to perhaps sign and trade. I don't see a huge market for them. And then Lou Williams expiring $8 million contract, which I think would be very attractive to other teams, but the Clippers are not just not going to get enough back for that. And then Patrick Beverley, you know, is anybody really going to want Patrick Beverley? And then
People would want Patrick Beverley. It's just a matter of what you could get for Patrick Beverley.
Right.
But Patrick Beverley, a desired player.
I'm looking at what the Clippers can bring back and to really make a – that would be better than having Patrick Beverley.
We'll be talking about these teams in the coming days.
I'm wondering what Montrezl Harrell, like, are things going to move very fast for him, or is he going to have to wait and see?
That's a sign and trade candidate right there.
Yeah.
You know. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up.
Crispy, crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Stopping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
One other thing before we go, and we'll be talking way more about all this stuff as we head towards December. I think this pod will probably be dominated this next week with discussion about these ins and outs. But something surfaced in the last couple of days, and I hate the Jordan-LeBron comparisons. I am it's not a conversation that I'm particularly interested in. To me, it's a very simplistic conversation. You either feel one way or the other. I'm not going to talk you into it. People just like to defend their position. They don't actually want to listen to the other side. But this interview that Jordan gave in 2017 with Cigar Aficionado, which is perfect for Jordan. he gave this interview in 2017, and it was a big interview then, and it was like Cigar Aficionado's like 25th anniversary or 50th anniversary. I apologize. I don't know which one it was. And he was done to commemorate this anniversary, and he was talking about all the times where he smoked cigars. But they decided to release the unedited, I don't know, you know, what the purpose was, but they decided to release the unedited interview that they did, the whole thing in one. And it was released last week, at the end of last week, and it got like 1.1 million views in like 2 days, because Jordan was so good in this interview. He's sitting in a golf club, actually Jack Nicklaus's golf club in Florida, one of his golf clubs in Jupiter, Florida. And he's smoking a cigar with a guy who runs Cigar Aficionado, and they're just talking about cigars and Cubans and whatever. And the guy asks him a very smart question. He asks him to compare the GOAT debate in golf between Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus. And this is an ingenious question, because what they're really asking is any comparison to Jordan, right? And I thought his answer, guys, was terrific. And even though it's a three-year-old answer, I highly doubt he feels differently. I'm just going to read it to you real quick, and then I want to hear what you guys think about it. This is what Jordan said on this interview that's just been released in full. You're never going to be able to say who the greatest of all time is. To me, that's more for PR and selling stories and getting hype. Jack and Tiger never played against each other. They never played in the same tournament. They never played with the same equipment. They never played the same length golf course. I never played against Wilt Chamberlain, and I never played against Jerry West. To now say that one is greater than the other to me is a bit unfair. This is where you can judge the two. How much impact did each have? How did they change or evolve the game? Jack during his time versus Tiger during his time. Now, obviously, Jack won more, blah, blah, blah. He talks some stuff about Jack and Tiger, which, you know, I doubt you care about golf listening here. And he goes, I won 6 championships and Bill Russell won 11. Does that make Bill Russell better than me or make me better than him? No, because we played in different eras. When you try to equate who is the greatest of all time, it's an unfair parallel. It's an unfair choice. There are those demons that obviously Tiger has to live with, but he's going to be challenged and graded upon that. For me, I think they're both great. I would never say that one is greater than the other. That's me. That's my opinion. Now, we are talking about one of the most competitive men in the history of sport that we are aware of, who is not afraid to show anybody else up. And that's him talking about the greatest of all time debate in golf and a little bit in basketball, which is sort of similar. Om, when you saw that, how did that make you feel?
It was pretty consistent with, I think, what Michael has said in the past, especially when he's been asked about LeBron. I don't feel that Michael truly, in the deepest of hearts, in a moment of when he will be raw and honest with you, that he believes that. I think that's his answer to give to people. And I think he truly believes he's the greatest of all time when it comes to basketball. I do think he has some points there. It's hard to compare, but I think at the end of the day, it's probably in his most inner circle, he believes that he's the greatest of all time. But the answer he gives right there is the PC-est way of giving it.
I guess that's fair, but I also think it's honest, Bobby.
Yeah, and I think the one thing that stood out for me and what we never debate is that, and because we never saw them play in person, was the older generation, right? Was the Bill Russells, the Jerry Wests of the world. And I'm thinking, like, what's going to happen like 40 years from now? Is it going to be LeBron and that next young star or someone else that the next generation of people are going to be debating here? And then people are going to be like, and Michael will be in that Bill Russell category?
Yeah.
Like, right? Like, is it going to be just that's how the world works and stuff, is that we never talk about that older generation of players because none of us saw them play in person here.
I think, Bobby, it's funny because when The Last Dance was going on, I did this piece talking to guys that were entering this year's draft about how did they learn about Michael Jordan, because they were all either born right when Michael was playing with the Wizards and was retiring, or they were born after Michael was done. And a lot of these guys were like, yeah, I just went to YouTube. And some of them were saying, like, I don't really like watching it because – It looks like the footage is so grainy, and, you know, he's not shooting threes and the scores are in the 70s. And it reminded me, Bobby, about probably our generation and how we felt when we would see this black and white footage of Wilt Chamberlain and Bill Russell. And we couldn't really relate to that. You know what I mean? And so these kids today, they talk about Michael in some ways of how we talk about Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell, and think about those guys.
Yeah.
That's why it was so genius to do The Last Dance. Because The Last Dance connected him to a whole new generation, I really do believe. But I mean, I know you're right, Om. He has said stuff like this before, but this is, you know, a very nice, complete answer, and I'm going to bookmark it and use his words when everybody wants to ask me about it, as if I have some sort of answer that will appease people. But all right, well, it's going to be a busy week, Bobby. I feel like, Bobby, you didn't think you were going to have to work that hard next week, but I feel like your phone is going to be aggressively lit up.
Yeah, and you know what? It's like, you know, I don't want to compare it to like a hurricane, but it feels like it's out. Like, just, it's just, I don't know when it's coming, but it's going to come at one point. It's not, I don't know if it's going to be tomorrow or maybe Tuesday night or Wednesday, but the salary cap, CBA, logistics is certainly coming here.
Bobby, I would say this. I wish there was no pandemic so that when it did come for you, I wish you would be on a beach in Aruba and you would have to run to that business office at the Hyatt.
Is that the strangest place you ever did a contract, Bobby, that you can talk about?
Yeah, I would say so. That's probably one of the more unique where I killed 5 hours of a day was in that high in that business office.
The strangest place you ever reported a story? Can you think of one?
Man. The most recent one I remember, when LeBron signed with the Lakers, I was at a Baskin Robbins in Culver City. And listen, I had stayed home locked in because in free agency, I just don't want to leave my apartment. I want to be looking at Twitter and everything. And I said, I need a break. I'm just going to go get a scoop of ice cream and come back. And I remember walking in and at that moment, my phone was just going off the hook. And I looked and I said, you got to be kidding me. And so,
well, you know what? When AD asked to be traded, that Monday morning when AD asked to be traded, I went out for a walk and I left my phone at home thinking like, well, who the hell's breaking news at 7:30 in the morning? You know, it's 4:30 out west. And I come home and it's, you know, Woj, missed calls, Woj, get up, missed call. Like, what the heck just happened? And it was that he had asked to be traded from the Pelicans.
What about you, Wendy?
You know, I mean, 1,000 airports. I'm trying to think something happened. I don't remember the exact story, but I remember there was a story that I had to work on in the Bangkok airport.
Yes.
That I had to deal with, and it was a crazy time difference. And I remember that for sure. And I was in Hawaii the day that David Blatt got fired. You know, I had taken a week in January. I was browbeat by my family. We don't want to go to Hawaii in July. We want to go to Hawaii in January. So I had finagled a week off in January, and David Blatt got fired. And I was on the balcony of my hotel looking at the ocean while the rest of my family was out playing in the surf. And I was working on that story. That's as close as I can get to Bobby's Aruba. But that was sort of mid-season. But, you know, all kinds of back corners of arenas, airports. I remember one time I was driving. I was covering the Memphis Grizzlies, Oklahoma City Thunder series. And I was driving. I decided to drive between Memphis and Memphis and Oklahoma City because the flight patterns, there was no direct flight. And it was like a 7-hour drive and it would take me 6 hours to fly with connections. And so I just drove it. And midway through, I got a text that Zach Randolph had been suspended for game 7, which ended up being a big moment. And I pulled over on the side of the road and parked in the McDonald's parking lot and stole McDonald's Wi-Fi to file the story.
I've definitely done that before.
Yeah. So I would have rather been in Aruba. But all right. Thank you for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast. We appreciate it. We'll have a lot more to come in the weeks ahead. We actually were thinking, you know, typically we, in the normal calendar, we sort of go on hiatus, like from mid-August to like mid to end of September. Well, there will be no hiatus of the Hoop Collective Podcast this offseason. We will go straight through because we are warriors. We went straight through the pandemic, darn it. We didn't. We kept right on going. So we'll still be with you. Thank you for listening. Have a great week. We'll talk to you soon.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.